morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and often deadly myths that are associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism and with the media, with military and economic schemes. Sometimes all in the same place, all in the same story. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is actually occurring while predicting how the events we cover may affect our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will return to Yahweh's Torah teaching and engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant, so that with His guidance, we will be able to discard all vestiges of religion, and with reason, we'll be able to engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number, as always, is toll-free, 877-300-7645, and we would appreciate your participation. At the end of our news hour yesterday, we're talking about a story in Iraq that has actually turned over a couple of new cards. It is a story that the United States doesn't want to talk about. Not much news here relative to it. But it was 2 days ago that we learned that Iraq's what's called Al-Qaeda wing, and it's really not an Al-Qaeda wing. They don't even use the Al-Qaeda name. They did ever so briefly, and then Osama bin Laden says, "You don't represent me. Stop using the name." It is the Islamic State of Iraq is the actual name of the terrorist group. It was apparent, based on everything that I was able to witness, and we all were able to witness in Syria, that they were the initial source of both Mujahideen, jihadists, and guns that turned the peaceful Syrian revolution into an armed conflict. Those guns would have been provided by America, and the Awakening Councils were the very source of those who were now active in the Islamic State of Iraq. So what we were considering yesterday is how Nusra, the al-Nusra is the, it's called the al-Nusra Front, has been the dominant player of the last year, maybe year and a half, in Syria. They are the primary jihadist organization pressing the battle as rebels against the Assad government. And it has been obvious that they are fundamentalist Muslims. They are given weapons explicitly because they are fundamentalist Muslims, Sunni Muslims, of course, by Qatar and by Saudi Arabia and by the United States indirectly through Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And while it was obvious that they were jihadists and that they prevailed, it would be worse for the world as at large. There was at least enough smoke around them that they didn't run afoul of the name, because the United States has errantly cast all terror under a single name, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, as it relates to al-Zawahiri and the late Osama bin Laden, is essentially nothing. Once every year you'll get a tape out from al-Zawahiri, and even then, he is about as exciting as mashed potatoes. And even during the end of his life, Osama bin Laden had no influence on anybody. I'm not even sure he could impress his wives. So it's essentially dead organization. But the reality is now that this al-Nusra Front is publicly announcing, as did the Islamic State of Iraq, that they are one and the same, which is what was always what I thought evident from what we were seeing. That being the case, there can be no more pretending that we're helping freedom fighters in Iraq. In Syria. It is now obvious that the mess we made in Iraq has crossed over the border into Syria, and now nearly 100,000 people have been killed based solely on a war that the United States was instrumental in fueling. It is one of the great disastrous legacies from the Bush administration. So the article was reading, the one we considered yesterday, says Iraq's Al-Qaeda wing, and we noted that Iraq really had no presence of al-Qaeda of any kind when we invaded Iraq, and even then, there was only a name only, a brief time that someone in Iraq used the moniker of the base, and since that time, there has been really no contact between the two. But this is the Islamic State of Iraq, fundamentalist Islamic organization, Sunni organization, has united with a kindred spirit in the Syrian group on the front line of the struggle to oust President Bashar al-Assad, is how the story begins. It's not just a Syrian group on the front line. It is the Syrian group on the front line. They are probably 60-70% of the Mujahideen. Sharpening a dilemma for nations that back the revolt, but fear rising Islamist militancy. Well, it's not sharpening the dilemma, it is black and white. The leader of the Islamic State of Iraq, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, said that the group had funded cells of fighters from Syria's al-Nusra Front, which is blacklisted by the United States since the early days of the two-year-old uprising. That's funny. The United States is saying that the al-Nusra Front is blacklisted because it's a terrorist organization, but yet we're going to support the rebels with arms, and about 60% of the fighting is perpetrated by al-Nusra. He said in a statement posted on Islamic website and seen by Reuters Tuesday that the two groups would operate under the joint title of the Islamic State of Iraq. That, which is, by the way, was interesting interesting news to the head of al-Nusra, because he said today, well, I was unaware of that. I am committing my loyalty to a unified struggle. We thus declare, the news article read, the cancellation of the name of the Islamic State of Iraq and the name al-Nusra Front, and grouping them together under one name, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. So this is Islamic logic. We're going to cancel the name the Islamic State of Iraq, and we're going to use the name the Islamic State of Iraq, but we're going to add and the Levant, as opposed to including al-Nusra Front. The militant Islamist element of the Syrian conflict poses a quandary for Western power. It's not an element. If you were to, you know, when I said al-Nusra is probably 60% of the fight, they're probably 100% of the terrorist acts of the fight. Nah, it's not quite that bad, but it's probably 85 to 90% of the terrorist elements of that fight. The reality is that fundamentalist Muslims are probably 99% of the Syrian conflict, of the forces in rebellion against the Assad government. For Western powers and their allies, this, of course, is a quandary, which favor Assad's overthrow but are alarmed at the growing power of Sunni Muslim jihadi fighters whose fiercely anti-Shiite ideology has fueled sectarian tensions in the Middle East. You know, they can't even say Islamic tensions. It has to be sectarian because that sounds scholarly, I suppose. But here again, there is no element to this fight that isn't religious. It is strictly Shia Islam trying to capitalize on the gift that America gave Iran by invading Iraq and giving it to Iran, which then toppled the domino, giving Syria to Iran, which then caused Iran to have total influence in Lebanon. And that has upset the dictators like the Qatari king and the Saudi Arabian king, because they're Sunnis, and they preferred it when they were the heavyweights of the Middle East, as opposed to the Shia mullahs in Iran. And so the war in Syria has become a proxy war of the blunder the United States made by invading Iraq. Now, Baghdadi's statement, first reported on the by the U.S.-based site monitoring service, could not immediately be authenticated. It was, however, authenticated today because al-Nusra responded and said, yet we're all for a united Khalifate. He said his group had deployed battle-hardened fighters and sent funds to local al-Nusra cells set up in Syria. Not just had sent battle-hardened fighters, I mean, these are jihadists that had been effective killing in Iraq and now were killing in Syria, because that's what Islam does best, but they had laid the groundwork for the armed uprising. So here's the Islamic State of Iraq revealing publicly everything that I've said for the last 2 years regarding Syria, that it was started as a direct result of the United States Awakening Councils and us arming Sunni Muslims to militias to oppose the Shia Muslim militias in Iraq, because we had, after our invasion, where we changed power from a secular government to a religious one. And here they're saying, yep, that's exactly what happened. There's a consequence of doing everything. And you can say, just like the world is saying, Assad is a bad guy, so we want him overthrown. You can say Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, so we want him overthrown. Well, unless you understand the consequence and what's going to happen as a result of that, what it's going to cost, and whether or not you can be reasonably certain that what you're going to end up will be vastly superior, it isn't the right thing to do. In the case of Iraq, he was a bad guy, but he was vastly better for his own people and for the Middle East at large and for Israel and the United States, because he was a secularist, and particularly because he was the enemy of Iran, than what we have now, which is simply giving Iraq to Iran. The government is controlled by the mullahs in Tehran, which has enabled them to go forward with their nuclear program. That's why the sanctions don't work, because they, in essence, control Iraq, and Iraq doesn't have sanctions on it. All of this is a direct result of the consequence of ousting Saddam Hussein. It was suicidal. It was counterproductive in every possible way. Now, you can say, well, you know, Saddam Hussein was killed hundreds, if not thousands, of Kurds. Well, so does the Turkish government. So does the Iranian government. So have Muslims in the Middle East for the last 1,000 years. How can the United States supply enormous amounts of weapons and call Turkey an ally when it is the most belligerent nation in terms of harassing the Kurds, and say that we ought to have deposed Saddam Hussein because he harassed Kurds? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about something that I think has fairly far-reaching implications. A great example is the consequence of the Iraqi war. It was determined that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. Okay, yes, he was a bad guy. So the United States decided that it would lie to justify an invasion of Iraq. It lied and said that he has to be stopped because he has weapons of mass destruction, and he has bought tons of yellowcake uranium and is developing a nuclear bomb. Now, at the time that was said, we knew it was not true. It's one of the reasons why I'm so disappointed that today George Bush, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice are viewed favorably. Condoleezza Rice is now a member of Augusta, and she's paraded around as if she were this great gift to the world. She was instrumental in perpetrating a lie. As a consequence of that lie, the United States invaded Iraq and made the world hugely worse for it. We not only our invasion not only led to the death of a million people, and now the most current estimates on the overall cost of this war being $6 trillion, of which only $2.5 trillion of it has met our deficit line. The rest of it is future consequences of this war. And in so doing, we made a very bad situation infinitely worse. We gave Iraq to Iran. That enabled Iran to complete its nuclear program. You know, you hear all these politicians saying, oh boy, you know, we're going to use sanctions to keep them from doing it. Nonsense. They're thumbing their nose at the world. They are absolutely completing their nuclear program, and that state with a nuclear bomb is absolutely suicidal for humanity. And all because we made the stupid decision to invade Iraq. It's the same thing with what's going on right now in Syria. The people viewing this say, Assad's a bad guy. Yes, he's a bad guy, so we should support those who oppose him. No, because those who oppose him are far worse. It's the same thing that is the problem with religion, the same thing with politics, the same thing with the human mindset, I think, in the West today. And that is either an inability or lack of desire to view anything in context. Just the snippet, bad guy, we got rid of him, we're good, is what is used as opposed, bad guy, current government far worse, current conditions in Iraq and Syria far worse, and in with the control of Iraq by Iran, the world is on the precipice of nuclear war. Absolutely foolhardy when you put it into context, that we're going to sacrifice 10,000 American lives, a million overall lives, and $6 trillion to make a bad situation worse, in context, doesn't resonate with people. Same thing was true with Afghanistan. You could say, we don't like Osama bin Laden, so let's go get him. So what are you going to do? You're going to start a 12-year war, which is going to ravage the country. You're going to leave it worse than you found it. For what? Because the moment we leave, it'll be right back to what it was. Whether it be somebody's religion where they take a snippet out of context, Paul's famous for it, and twist it, or politics or the military, that is our overriding problem today, an unwillingness to make connections. The only way that you can understand is to immerse yourself in the evidence, to observe what can be known, and then make connections so that you can put the pieces together and see the big picture. And that's what we're unwilling to do. It was obvious, looking at Syria, how it happened, why it happened, and why it will be infinitely worse for the world if the thug that is al-Assad is deposed by these Sunni militants. If the Sunni militants win, the Christians in Syria are as good as dead. If they win, then there will be an ongoing war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, with China and Russia on one side, the United States and Europe on the other. And it'll turn to a global war. If the terrorist, the jihadist win, rhetoric against Israel will turn into confrontation against Israel. From every possible perspective, when you look at the situation in context, it is easy to see that Syria is simply a proxy war. The United States and Europe on one side, China and Russia on the other, Iran on one side, Saudi Arabia on the other. And in the process, not only are tens of thousands of people dying needlessly, and is the world being pushed into a worse situation than already existed there. But when you have proxy wars like this, they often explode into world wars. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking about the Syrian conflict and the realization that there is no separation between fundamentalist Islam, the Sunni awakening councils, and the Islamic State of Iraq. That's terrorist group, and al-Nusra, the primary terrorist group operating in Syria, is leading the rebellion. And that all of these are one and the same with al-Qaeda, which is also a fundamentalist Sunni terrorist organization. And that we get ourselves into this because collectively, politically, militarily, religiously, patriotically, far too few people bother to consider the evidence that is available and make connections, and therefore very few people actually form reasoned conclusions in the overall context of what is happening in a place or in the world as a whole. Not aware of Islam, that's an enormous, in fact, the biggest piece of the context that is usually missed from all of these decisions and reports. So here we have George Bush and Dick Cheney deciding that they would fabricate reasons to become a wartime administration and the popularity that would bring them to invade Iraq. Disastrous. In every possible way, a unmitigated, foolhardy move. And then as part of that, they decide that they would solve the problem in Iraq and be able to leave by arming the Awakening Councils, which was to create a militia of Sunni Muslims in Iraq to oppose the Shia Muslim militias in Iraq. The consequence of that is the Syrian war. Syrian war doubly started, number one, because with Iraq deposed and Iran in control of Iraq, Iraq had been Syria's ally, because Syria has to have an ally because it doesn't have the gas reserves that the other countries do and therefore would be destitute. It's now Iran, which was the flames for the proxy war. So without recognizing that it was stupid for America to arm the militias of Sunni warlords in Iraq, Petraeus, who came up with that plan, was elevated almost to sainthood in the United States. And all the time I'm screaming, no, this is going to turn out badly. And it has. Al-Nusra and the Syrian civil war is a direct result of that stupidity. It's a consequence of these things. But at least we had somewhat reasoned and thoughtful leaders, right? This story came across the newswire today. This is from CNN. It says, Republican leaders in Congress received a dire warning on Tuesday from former Vice President Dick Cheney, who was instrumental in all of this, on the ongoing crisis in North Korea. Oh, so how do you think old Dick Cheney's briefing was to these men? I bet it was lucid, contextual, maybe some great history, something that maybe a comparison to another situation the world faced and how the various options that we have would lead to various types of results. You think that's what he said? Well, I quote, "We're in deep doo-doo." That's the end of the quote. "We're in deep doo-doo," end quote, Cheney told lawmakers, according to a GOP leadership aide. Cheney added the current North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, is, oh boy, catch this, unpredictable, and that he doesn't share the United States worldview. Nobody shares the United States worldview, by the way. So it certainly wouldn't be Kim Jong-un. Thank you for that, Dick. One lawmaker present at the session, Steve Sutherland of Florida, said Cheney wore a cowboy hat, and he looked really good. These are the buffoons that are making the kind of decisions that lead to the annihilations of tens of thousands of people in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Syria. It is why we're in this pickle. It's one thing about this, though, that causes me a bit of pause is that when we were considering the financial crisis in Cyprus and the fact that Cyprus has now lost its sovereign status as a nation as a result of it, it's a wholly owned property of the International Monetary Fund today, that it would appear, of course, that there is some conspiracy going on. But when you consider the intelligence level of these idiots, we're in deep doo-doo, and he looked really nice wearing a red cowboy hat, it's hard to ascribe conspiracy to such morons. Returning to the story on Syria, we have learned that the Islamic State of Iraq, an outgrowth of the Awakening Council, Sunni jihadists, had said that they were instrumental in the formation of the weaponry and the jihadists that comprised al-Nusra, but they just hadn't said so previously for security reasons. Yet the security reasons is they get a lot more weapons if they don't announce their unification. on one day, al-Nusra, for example, as an Islamic terrorist organization, claimed responsibility for 45 attacks in Damascus, in Desra, Hama, and Homs that reportedly killed hundreds of people, including 60 in just a single suicide bombing that day. These are suicide bombers that we are now joined at the hip with. 70,000 people have been killed. Twice that number have been raped. At least that number are missing, having been kidnapped. You know, I heard the first story in the news this morning. I wanted to scream. It talked about a person who had kidnapped someone, was now in prison, and it's probably going to cost them six figures to defend themselves and get out of prison. But if you're with the CIA and you kidnap someone, you not only are free to do it again, you bear no consequence of having kidnapped someone, but you get paid six figures for having done so. I'm speaking, of course, of the case of the German citizen that was kidnapped in Macedonia by the CIA and then tortured, even sodomized, and the U.S. government deciding that it didn't want to hold anybody accountable for that. So you can kidnap for the U.S. government and get paid six figures, but if you kidnap as a private citizen, the U.S. government will throw you in jail. And you can spend six figures trying to defend yourself. Al-Nusra, the story goes on, has gained support as the violence and misery in Syria radicalizes a population that was used to living under Assad's secular rule. Yeah, here's the truth. In a country now that is where wide swaths are under the control of Islamic jihadists, they invoke all of the principles laid out in the ninth surah of the Quran. In the ninth surah of the Quran, Muslims, it was revealed because there were Muslims in Yathrib, today's Medina, who did not want to go on a jihad raid against the Byzantine Empire. That was just fine terrorizing Jews because they were easy prey. It was just fine robbing and terrorizing local Arabs. That was easy prey. But to go against a outpost of a nation that had an actual military, they didn't want any part of. So they all grumbled and said, we don't want to be jihadists. And so Allah said that if you don't want to be a jihadist, you cease to be a Muslim, and I want my jihadist Muslims to kill you. Call it Islamic jihad training. Well, so in Syria, if you're a Sunni Muslim and you live in one of the areas that's now controlled by Sunni Muslim militants, you either participate in jihad or they kill you. And in the process, they will rape every girl and woman in your family. That is what we have perpetrated on Syria, and we are responsible for it. The United States. The Iraqi Al-Qaeda wing, which isn't an Al-Qaeda wing, it's the Islamic State of Iraq. Al-Qaeda had zero presence. George Bush lied, of course. Had no involvement, no presence whatsoever in Iraq prior to the American invasion. Osama bin Laden hated Saddam Hussein because Saddam Hussein was a secularist. He wanted to lead the rebellion against him. Well, it says anyway that Iraq's Sunni Muslims and Sunni Islamists in Syria share a hatred for Assad's Alawite government, which shares power with the Shiite Hezbollah and with Shiite Iran, as if that was not obvious. The Islamic State in Iraq has, according to the article, suffered serious setbacks before U.S. troops left at the end of 2011. It's kind of like America putting in the news that the Taliban has suffered serious setbacks when it's stronger, better armed, and more resolute than ever, and will bounce back to control the country within days of the time that America retreats, having left nothing but a wake of carnage in the process. And it is now saying that that the Islamist militant insurgency in Iraq is bounced back with a surge of suicide bombings as well as well-coordinated attacks across the country this year. Yes, Sunni on Shia violence and Shia on Sunni violence in Iraq has turned that place into a living hellhole. Now, we don't hear about it as much on the daily news, although there's every two or three days there's a suicide bomber that kills 10 to 20 or 30 people. But all of the smaller attacks don't make our news anymore because there's very few Western journalists in Iraq. America is no longer fighting there, so it's not fun. But we left that country completely broken. We broke it, and then we left it in the midst of a religious civil war. The same thing now exists in Syria. Security officials in the Anbar province was the heartland of al-Qaeda's war on American troops. Gosh, it's just amazing. Well, the reason I guess we can't make decisions in context is that when you read things like this, that America was fighting a war against al-Qaeda in Iraq, you realize that America's way is too stupid. The journalists in America are too dumb to prevent information that could be learned and used effectively. There was no al-Qaeda in Iraq. America did not fight a war against al-Qaeda in Iraq. That is a myth of proportions so egregious that you'd have to be an absolute nincompoop to believe that. America's war in Iraq was against Iraqi citizens, both Shia and Sunni. We went into Iraq to fight the army of Saddam Hussein and never engaged them. Every battle that we engaged in was with common citizens. That's the reality of Iraq. Shattering Myths. I want to leave you with one thought here as it relates to Syria. I'm an al-Zawahiri, who is now the head of what was once al-Qaeda, was a head of his own terrorist organization in Egypt. It was a derivative of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was a very successful terrorist in his own right in Egypt before joining Osama bin Laden and the United States in opposing the Russian-backed government in Afghanistan. It was quite the partnership, of course. He said the following: let your fight be for the sake of Allah, for the sake of bringing Allah's Sharia, which is Islamic rule, Islamic law, Zawahiri said. Do all you can to ensure the fruit of your struggle, Allah willing, an Islamic state, a state that would be a building stone to the return of the rightly guided caliphate. So if we can gain anything from this, what would be the only reasoned conclusion as to what al-Qaeda represents? Because he did not say, let me become the head, let al-Qaeda be, this fight be for the sake of al-Qaeda. He didn't even mention his organization. He only mentioned Allah, Sharia, and Islam. So what would one rightfully be able to deduce from that? Is our war against al-Qaeda, or is this war against Islam? Larry, maybe you could answer that question, because nobody in the media or in politics seems to be able to.
Yeah, well, you know, it wouldn't be too politically correct to attack a religion now, would it? And obviously it's Islam that the war is against, no matter what face they want to couch it. And the truth of the matter is that these people want to. He said it, a caliphate, didn't he?
They want to unify the entire world, beginning with the entire Middle East under Sharia law, which is the most repressive, diabolical submissive thing man has ever conceived. Unjust. They want to unify all of the Middle East first under Islam, which means, of course, they have to destroy Israel, which will be their goal after they...
It's going to happen, by the way.
That's the plan, and yet we continue to lash out at symptoms and pretend we're having a war against al-Qaeda when al-Qaeda ain't pretending to have a war against us. They're simply trying to advance Islam. Now, another question for you. And this goes back to the statement that Obama made praising Margaret Thatcher, which he called, you know, Margaret Thatcher the world's greatest advocate for freedom and a great friend of America. Well, since Obama and Margaret Thatcher articulate positions on socialism and free enterprise, which are the absolute antithesis of one another. If Margaret Thatcher was a great advocate for freedom and a great friend of the United States, what does that make Obama?
Well, the opposite. They're obviously in different corners there, you know. I mean, as far as their speaking goes, anyway.
Well, in terms of their actions, I mean, what Margaret Thatcher sought to do was empower free enterprise, empower business, and get people to take responsibility for their own lives, to cut the size of government indulgences and handouts, and to grow the economy by removing excess burden, regulations, and taxation on business so that people would actually have a job and be able to take care of themselves, being responsible for themselves. Obama is at war with business. He wants to take ever more of what people who are productive make, so that more and more people become dependent on an overburdened and inefficient government. They are
maybe
opposites.
The myth you could shatter too, because what Obama seems to be advancing are fascist ideas.
He's certainly socialistic. His State of the Union address, where he said that he wanted to manage the U.S. economy like he is commander in chief over the U.S. military, where it is all top down driven, and people are given orders and they simply carry them out. They have no freedom in their choices. And he compared the U.S. economy, his vision for it, to the U.S. military. As such, that is as communist can be, from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. Now, I think he is everything you could glean from him in terms of his statements and his class warfare doctrine, he would be a communist. But the realization is that there isn't much difference between communism and fascism, and those who support communism typically try to push it into a Russian style of fascism where the oligarchs prevail.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.